Welcome to Supersized Science, where we feature research and discoveries nationwide, enabled by advanced computing technology and expertise at the Texas Advanced Computing Center of the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Jorge Salazar, a science writer at TAC. The key to understanding proteins, such as those that govern cancer, COVID-19, and other diseases, is really quite simple for scientists anyway. Identify their chemical structure and find which other proteins can bind to them. But there's a catch in that the search space for proteins is enormous. For instance, we'll be talking with scientists about a typical protein they study, which is made of 65 amino acids and with 20 different amino acid choices at each binding position. There are 65 to the 20th power binding combinations, a number bigger than the estimated number of atoms there are in the entire universe. On the podcast today are Brian Coventry, a research scientist with the Institute for Protein Design, University of Washington, and the Howard Hughes Medical Institute, and Nathaniel Bennett, a postdoctoral scholar at the Institute for Protein Design. Coventry and Bennett co-authored a study published May of 2023 in the journal Nature Communications. In it, their team used deep learning methods on TAC's Frontera supercomputer to augment existing energy-based physical models in de novo, or from scratch, computational protein design, resulting in a tenfold increase in success rates verified in the lab for binding a designated protein with its target protein. Drs. Coventry and Bennett, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. Happy to be here.
Could you speak to the main findings of a study that you and other scientists were involved in that was published in Nature Communications back in May? And this has to do with one-sided protein interface design. And it used computational deep learning methods and combined those with experimental data to be able to come up with a new and exciting way to design proteins.
So we've been designing protein binders in the lab for a few years now. And previously, we'd been using only physically or energetically based methods to design these binders, trying to take into account exactly how much energy you're going to get from a hydrogen bond or how much energy you're going to get from a hydrophobic interaction. And in the paper that we just published, we showed that you can have a significantly improved pipeline by incorporating deep learning methods to do your evaluations of the quality of these interfaces, as opposed to trying to enumerate all of these energies by themselves. So you can account for more complex energetics by implicitly modeling them as opposed to explicitly modeling them.
All right, something I want to add here. The combination of, at least at the current moment, the combination of both the deep learning and the old physical-based methods is a huge improvement to just using the physical-based methods. The short answer to what we figured out in the paper is that if you use AlphaFold, your success rate is 10 times higher. That's the shortest description of the paper, I think.
The Institute for Protein Design, I believe that they developed something like AlphaFold, right? Like the Rosetta algorithm. Could you speak to the choices made in the methods for the machine learning, like how you decided to use what in for this problem?
Okay, I'll let Nate handle the second part of this. But first, I want to explain the first part. Our lab calls most things we make Rosetta. And currently, there are two things out in the world that both have the word Rosetta in them and are entirely different. So there is Rosetta, and then there is Rosetta Fold. Rosetta is a 15-year-old piece of software with 3 million lines of C++ code that does all of the explicit physical modeling of proteins. It's an object-oriented protein programming framework. I'll say it's humans' best attempts at describing how proteins work through physics. Then there is Rosetta Fold, which is an entirely deep learning network-based closely on how AlphaFold works.
And yeah, so for looking at which of these we wanted to use, AlphaFold, Rosetta, or RosettaFold in the paper, we have this massive set of 2 million binder designs from previous campaigns where we know what bound and what didn't bind. And you can look at retrospectively and ask questions about this massive data set and say, well, if I only took things that AlphaFold liked and ordered those, how high would my success rate have been? Or if I only took things that Rosetta liked and ordered by that, how high would my success rate have been? So we used that to figure out what our best metric was going to be. And we then went and did a prospective study to just confirm that this was actually going to work prospectively and wasn't just some noise we were picking up retrospectively.
Dumb question about the methods in the study, whether this vast improvement, this tenfold improvement, was it looking at proteins that you already knew would bind, or are these like completely new proteins that you had no idea?
The way we did this study is we did it in two phases. So first, okay, so it's a one-sided protein binder design challenge, which means that given a natural target, everyone's favorite example is the COVID spike protein, design a binder from scratch that binds to it. So in terms of the proteins involved in the study, there's always a natural target protein, a COVID spike protein, you know, and then we had a previous paper with 10 target proteins. We have influenza, that spike protein, TRCA, bunch of natural cell receptors. And then we have, I think in the paper, we talk about a million of our own man-made proteins. So no one in the world can tell you which of those million are going to work. Now, we have tested them experimentally, so we know which ones work. And so then in the, we'll call it the planning phase of the paper, the retrospective analysis, we use our best tools to figure out which tool is the best at predicting those million binders. And none of them do perfectly, but some of them do a lot better than others. And it turns out the best tool in the previous data is AlphaFold. And so we showed that previously, had we used AlphaFold to downsample our million to a smaller number, we could have essentially kept more or less the same number of binders, but ordered 10%, so a tenfold increase in success rate. And so it's one thing to say, hey, look, had we done this, our success rate would have been 10 times higher. But, you know, people will say, well, I don't believe you. So then what we did was we picked 4 new targets. This is the prospective part of the study. We picked the IL-2 receptor alpha, IL-10 receptor alpha, LTK and ALK, they're all cell receptors. And what we did was we designed a whole bunch of proteins using Frontera to, you know, as potential candidates. I think we probably had 2 million total. And we downsampled that 2 million down to 150,000 using a few different methods. We used either the old physics Rosetta-based method, or we used AlphaFold. And then we went and tested these. And what's cool is literally no one knows which ones are going to work at this point. We don't have the data yet. And when we tested them, we saw, sure enough, the ones selected by AlphaFold had a 10 times higher success rate, which proves that we were right in our post and our previous analysis.
Could you speak to the computational side of this? Why did you need advanced computing, computation? in this protein design, and maybe also speak to TAC and what how TAC was able to help.
The search space for proteins is enormous. Our proteins are typically 65 amino acids, and at each of those 65 positions, there are 20 choices of which amino acid to use, which means the total number of proteins that we could design is 20 to the 65th power, which is, you know, it's like 10 to the 50th power or something. And obviously, we can't look through all 10 to the 50th. And so we only look through a smaller subset. And, you know, we do so as fast as we can, but that's still a big subset to look for, through. And then it gets potentially worse, because we're designing a 3D model of a protein. And so we start with a protein backbone. Right. So you can imagine a potential 65 amino acid protein with its 3D coordinates, but no sequence yet. And then what we do is we take that protein and we put it near the target protein. So that's called docking. So for each of our backbones, we can dock it to the target in a huge number of ways. There's literally millions of ways you could dock it if you think about subtle variations in the dock all counting differently, and they do. And so then we have millions of docks, and then for each dock, we need to try to put a protein sequence on it. So for each dock, there's a 10 to the 50 search. Which it's not actually that bad when we do the computation, but we're searching through a 10 to the 50 space. And that's what gives us our outputs. And then to make matters worse, I talk about a single protein backbone. We have 20,000 backbones, each with a slightly different shape. So multiply the whole thing by 20,000 again. And it's an enormous search space. And the thing we have found time and time again is that the more examples you search through, the better examples you find. And as such, our protocol is optimized to search exceptionally large spaces very quickly. So when you're searching through millions, you spend a tenth of a second on each. And then we pick the best from those. Perhaps now we spend 3 seconds on each. You pick the best from those, you spend a minute on each. And that's what the pipeline looks like, going from enormous to small. And from there, those are our designed proteins.
I think Brian covered most of it, but for how we needed TAC for this, all of these design trajectories, like we would call them, like Brian was describing, they're all independent of one another. So they don't really, you don't need to pass information between these design trajectories as they're running. And so what you can do is you can just split up this problem, which has something like 2 to 6 million designs in it, and run all of those in parallel on some massive computing resource. So we used Frontera as our computing resource for all of these, which just like has a crazy amount of CPU nodes on it. And we assigned each of these CPUs to do one of these design trajectories, which lets you complete a extremely large number of design trajectories in a actually feasible time.
You're looking at two PhD projects merging right here. The protein design aspect was my PhD project, and then the involving deep learning was Nate's project. The way we actually used TAC was we used Frontera and predominantly the normal queue to run our docking program called RiffDock. And RiffDock, as Nate said, is 20,000 independent trajectories that each generate a few thousand docks, totaling us to 6 million total that we move forward with. Then we took those 6 million docs, we would split them into chunks of about 100,000 and assign each 100,000 to a node. We use Tax Program Launcher to do this. And so each of those 100,000 would be split into, say, 100 jobs of 1,000 proteins each. So 1,000 proteins go into Rosetta using Launcher, where the 1,000 are first screened at the 10th of a second scale. The ones that survive are screened at the 1 second scale. And the ones that survive that are screened at the at the few minute scale.
Could you maybe speak to a little bit more about the computation? Right, you mentioned the study mentioned experimental data was used. Could you speak to what data was used in this, and also the deep learning side of it?
The data is all data collected by the Institute of Protein Design and all publicly available at this point. The data is specifically what's known as yeast surface display binding data. The way that works, to really summarize here, is we're able to order thousands to tens of thousands of different DNA strands, each encoding a different protein, the proteins we designed. We then combine the DNA with yeast in such a way that each yeast cell expresses one of our designed proteins on its surface. So you have yeast A expresses design A, yeast B expresses design B, and so on to 10,000. We're then able to sort the yeast cells into cells that bind and cells that don't bind. This is how we determine which binders work and which binders don't work. From there, we're able to take the yeast cells that work, take the yeast cells that didn't work, use tools from the Human Genome Sequencing Project to figure out which DNA worked and which DNA didn't work. And that gets us which binders worked and which binders didn't work. And in total for the study, we had about 1 million previous examples that we drew from, and we generated about 150,000 new ones.
Yeah. And then so for the deep learning side, deep learning has been, as probably everybody is aware, really interesting and powerful in text. The famous example is ChatGPT. And it's also been really good at generating and understanding images, like in DALL-E. Recently, people have been figuring out how to frame these models to be able to have them learn well in a three-dimensional space. So instead of learning at a 1D space for text or a 2D space for images, you can expand that to a 3D space. And what people have found is that these models do much better if they're thinking in the same dimension. They're thinking in the same sort of, with the same rules that your data lives according to. This is one of the big advancements with AlphaFold and Rosetta Fold, is this ability to think in 3D space. The other big advancement that actually took many decades to get was that we have a ton of protein structures that have been experimentally determined now. So there is something like 150,000 to 200,000 experimentally determined protein structures that these models can look at and start picking up information about how does this exact amino acid structure sequence lead to this exact protein structure. And so by looking at many, many of these examples and reasoning in three-dimensional space, these models actually get pretty good at figuring out, well, hey, I have like a hydrogen bond here, and like this is some hydrophobic packing that's quite nice over here. And what you can do is that you can then take that model and ask it to take your target protein and your binder protein and have it try to dock these proteins together and say, given all that you know about protein interfaces and protein energetics, does this doc form in the way that I want it to? And how likely do you think it is that it will form like that? So that's how we are framing deep learning to help us with this protein-protein interaction filtering challenge.
You've been listening to Brian Coventry of the Institute for Protein Design, University of Washington, and the Howard Hughes Medical Institute, and Nathaniel Bennett, also at the Institute for Protein Design. Supersized Science is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world, brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin. The opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the host, not of the University of Texas at Austin. For the Texas Advanced Computing Center, I'm Jorge Salazar.